Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to Radio Islam International with me, Sister Faiza Munshi, on this beautiful Wednesday morning on the New Horizons program. What are we talking about today? Alhamdulillah, we're talking about how to raise responsible children. So that is our topic of conversation today. Inshallah, in a few minutes, we'll get my guest on. But for now, I just want to ask the question, why do we believe it is truly important to raise responsible children? And while we answer, I think most of us will answer the question and say, yes, we have to raise responsible children. The follow-up question would be, what are we doing to raise responsible children? So I think as adults, we have to take on that responsibility, so to speak, in order to raise children who are responsible, who are, you know, who will really take on that task of adulting in a way that will make us proud. But what is our role? What is our role as parents? What are the roles of teachers? But particularly today, we will be talking from the perspective of parents. What is our role as parents in bringing up responsible children? And so that's really what we're going to be talking about for most of today's program, inshallah. And, you know, we've got to be able to understand it from different perspectives. And I think when we have the perspective of someone, there's this lady by the name of Lane Hazeman, who has written an article about this aspect of raising responsible children. And we'll really talk to her in depth about, you know, what are some of the things we could do, what are the things we can't do, and maybe what are some of the mistakes we tend to make along the way. For many of us, in order to raise responsible children and children who will really do the tasks that we set at hand, we tend to sometimes perhaps use the word nag, and we'll talk about that as well in the program. You know, we become the person who's always telling them, you have to do this, do that, do this, do that. It's like a constant, consistent, you know, we're always giving them instruction. And what is that role? And what is it that we are doing to set the stage for what it is that our children will do? So oftentimes when we look at the aspects of building ourselves up, building our children up, it comes to the point of what are we doing as adults? I think sometimes it almost becomes, for us as adults, it becomes a sense of, you know, what am I doing wrong? But I think we need to also look at it from the perspective of not so much of what am I doing wrong, but what is it that I am setting up for my children? What are some of the behaviors that I'm doing that I could change for myself that would make me a better person? And that would essentially teach my children to, you know, behave in a better way. So I think these are some of the questions we tend to ask ourselves. And whenever we do any program on parenting and we talk about any sort of aspects of doing parenting work, it often comes back to us as adults. And it's not so to point fingers, so to speak, but to be able to understand that no child comes with a manual, that no two children are alike, that no two parents are alike, that we are all on this learning curve of being able to understand what is it that we are doing, how is it that we are doing it, and how is it that we can do it a little bit differently. So that's really our topic of conversation today, inshallah, on how to raise responsible children. I'm hoping you find it interesting and engaging and, you know, able to take something from it. For now, a short break. We'll get my guest on and we'll continue with the program. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to Radio Islam International with me, Sister Faiza Munshi, on this beautiful Wednesday morning on New Horizons. Like I said in the introduction, today we're talking about how to raise responsible children. And on the line with me, I'd like to welcome to Radio Islam International, Lynn Hazeman. Am I saying your name and surname right, Lynn?
Yes, that's correct. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you so much for being with us this morning and giving us your time. We're talking about how to raise responsible children. And in my intro, I said it often comes back to us as adults, you know. So let's just give you a quick intro. Lynn Hazeman is a South African mommy blogger living in Saldanha Bay with her husband and two primary school children. She is a recovering alcoholic and addict with bipolar disorder. On her blog, she writes about a wide variety of topics, mainly focusing on parenting and mental health. Mental health, parenting, this has become very much a focus because we, in this time, we're unprecedented times, things that we've never had to deal with before. And I think the question often comes back to how are we parenting and what are we doing right and what are we doing wrong and what can we learn from what we're doing? Hey, Lynn?
Oh, most certainly. And definitely, like you say, at this time with the pandemic, I have found my own mental health to be a struggle. And I've seen my children as well also with their own struggles with, you know, coping and being the person that they look up to. I have to keep my stuff in order, not just myself, but so that they can, you know, model what I'm doing. So it's a huge responsibility.
I think, you know, this is the part as adults that it becomes difficult for us as parents, because I always say, I wish each child with their unique personalities and character had come with a manual when we gave birth to them, and they were holding it in their hand and they said, yeah, you can bring me up this way and then you'll get it right. But none of them do. And as parents, we often are on a journey of learning about ourselves through the process, even through this pandemic, being able to learn about our own perhaps mental health issues or struggles or weaknesses, etc. And I think it's important that we understand that we are just as human as our children and as our friends and everyone else. You know, every one of us is human and we make mistakes. But today's program, we want to look at some of these things that we do as adults and what is it that we do that we could perhaps change in order to bring up responsible children. And we're going to start with the fact that we all want to raise responsible children that can be depended on. What is the correct age to start in terms of building this responsibility and the sense of responsibility within our kids?
Faiza, I think the earlier the better, and as young as toddlers, the sooner you start teaching them the concept of responsibility, the better it will be in the long run. And obviously, you know, when you start teaching a young toddler how to be responsible, it doesn't always go how you may expect or how you would like it to go. So I find that the more time you put in at the beginning, the better off in the long term. So, you know, small things that children can do, you know, young toddlers, is to pick up their own toys, set the table, you know, small little tasks like that. And it's, you know, that the concept of if you're going to play with that toy, when you've finished, you go put it back in your toy box. Just small stuff like that. And that kind of, you know, feeds through into an older age when they make themselves something to eat and then they got to take their plate back to the kitchen, etc.
You know, and I think oftentimes, this brings me to sort of the next question and having a discussion about that, is oftentimes we as parents, and as mothers particularly, I would say, and now, of course, with the pandemic, it's changed the entire nuance in the home. You know, dads are at home as well. We just find it's just easier to do it ourselves, right? We are a little impatient, especially with toddlers and preschoolers, to teach them how to do a task, or, you know, the toys will irritate us and we need to pick it up ourselves. Why is it that we need to be clear about what we want to done and the patience we need to get it done?
Oh, the patience. There's a lot less of that in the last year, I must say.
But for sure.
Yeah. Look, I think the thing is, it's going to take 10 times longer to get your child to pick something up off the floor and pack it away than it would for the 30 seconds it would take you. But like I've said, in the long term, the more time you put in at the young age to teach them how to do it themselves, the better. So, for example, my children wash dishes, they do the laundry, they pack away all their own clothes, they make their own beds, they tidy their bedroom, they sweep, they tidy up after themselves. And a lot of people are quite surprised at what they do. Like some of my kids, my friend's children don't have any chores.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. We're definitely going to talk about this aspect of chores. But I mean, even I'm surprised listening to you, because I mean, when I read up your bio, it said it's primary school children.
Yes.
And you're right. I think the aspect of making sure that we start as early as possible is very important. Later on, I'm going to talk about the aspect of nagging, because I truly feel like I'm a mother who nags, right? And I think many women out there will resonate with me and say, you know, I know what you're saying, Lynn. I know that you're saying that we need to teach them, we need to be patient, we need to be able to take half an hour as opposed to 30 seconds to get this task done. But what sort of mental strength does it take as a mother?
Oh, a huge amount. And I also just want to make it clear that I write about these topics, but I'm not perfect and my kids don't do it perfectly. So it's progress, not perfection.
Yes, of course. I love that.
I know the theory and I try and implement the theory and I try to be patient, but that does not mean it always translates into reality.
Yes. Yes, 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 absolutely. And I think, you know, what you're saying is so true, is that we often look at the aspect, we look at someone who's written an article or who's doing some work, and perhaps if we come to your home, we'll go, oh, but that's not so perfect, and that's okay, you know. We need to realize our humanness and the fact that we all are on this journey of learning and being able to move forward as long as there's progress, as opposed to moving backwards. And we're not, like you say, we're not working for perfection. What is, let's just bring this aspect of perfection into it, if you've ever touched on it. What is the... What would be a negative in terms of parenting and expecting perfection from our children? What would happen there?
Well, I think nobody's perfect, and I think it's important for your children to know that and to see it. And one of the articles, the article that we're actually talking about on my website, the two aspects are you need to allow your children to make a mistake, because they learn best when they make a mistake, and they need to learn how to deal with a mistake. What do you do once you've made a mistake? So they need to know how to correct it and how not to fall apart. And part of that is when we as an adult make a mistake, we need to acknowledge it, we need to own it, and we need to apologize, fix it, and move on.
Yeah, I mean, you bring in this aspect of apologizing, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But I like what you're saying about the fact that we need to understand also that as we make mistakes, our children will make mistakes. But even in this aspect of, you know, sort of making mistakes, is there really a space where we need to make sure that we're trustworthy? They're able to look up to us and say, okay, Mom says that we need to be picking our clothes up off the floor, but I don't find that her clothes are on the floor every other day. Is that a very important aspect in terms of children, you know, they do what they see. They imitate us. They watch what we're doing all the time. And they grow up with that more so than what we say. They grow up with what we are doing as the example.
Totally. That's absolutely vital. I've seen some parents have got a parenting attitude of do what I say and not what I do. But that's not going to work. You know, for your children to be responsible, whatever behaviors you want to see your children doing, you need to model that so that they copy you and they can respect what you're saying.
Tell me the journey. I mean, I know this is off sort of the questions we mentioned we talk about, but in terms of your experience, so you've got two primary school children, and I think it's always wonderful to speak to someone who's had the practical experience and understands the journey of motherhood in a way that is real. So you say, you know what, my kids know that they have the responsibilities, they know what they have to do, they, you know, pick up after themselves, etc. What was your journey and what was your process of getting them to the point where they are doing this? And how old are your kids, firstly? And then also, what was the process to get them to this point?
Well, my son is 7 and my daughter is 9. And it's been in the beginning, teaching them how to do things was honestly very frustrating, very tiring. Like you say, it's very tempting to just do it myself because it'll be done quicker. And I work from home. I had my daughter at home till she was 2. I had my son at home working with me until he was 13 months. And he was literally on my boob for 13 months. He didn't get off until I forced him off. And so it was, and I work full time. I bring in a part of the income for our household. So it's been very frustrating and very tiring, especially in the last year when I've had to add in schooling as well. But I found that, you know, long-term, putting in the time and effort to teach them how to do something properly really does pay off for me in the long run. And so in the last year, the fact that my children can do the dishes on their own, they make their own beds, they can sweep, they can kind of mostly mop without killing me because of the wet floor, mostly. Yeah, we're still working on the squeezing the mop out, so that's how it can sometimes just get a little bit dangerous. But it's been mostly okay. And I found that rewarding them and acknowledging what they do has been a huge part of it. So I've actually got an app on my phone, and it's called Child Reward, I think. And it's fantastic. You can add in specific tasks that each child has to do, and then you can also add in rewards so they can cash out their stars for pocket money or for, you know, an extra hour of screen time, etc. And that really motivates them. Every night we give them their stars. So they get a star for tidying up after themselves. They get a star for making their bed, for packing away their laundry, that sort of thing. So I think acknowledging and rewarding them for what they've done is really important. And then another aspect is to make sure that they do all of their tasks and their chores and their homework before they get to do all the nice stuff. So they need to... It's the same like me. I can't just sit down and eat a bowl of ice cream in the middle of the day when I'm supposed to be working. I need to get my work done. I need to do my children's homework and make supper, etc. And then I can sit and, you know, binge on my Netflix series and eat my ice cream. So I'm teaching them those same things. So they're not allowed to use the phone or the iPad or the TV until homework is done, their bags are unpacked, their uniforms are hung up, etc. And they get into the routine of that.
I love that you've brought in this aspect of homework, of school clothes, of bags packed, etc. Because oftentimes when you look at responsibility, and we spoke about quite a few minutes there with regard to chores, etc., and we'll talk about it again as well as we go through the program, but you bring in this aspect of homework, of school clothes, of all of that. That is all part of building a child's ability to be responsible, you know, as opposed to screaming early in the morning and saying they can't find their shorts or their socks or whatever, and mum running around. And that's often the picture that we have, is that as mothers, we feel that if our children go to school, they've got to go to school looking a certain way, no matter what it does to us. It doesn't matter if we're looking frazzled by the time they leave the house. And I think that's the way as mums, we kind of, you know, shoot ourselves in the foot. Because if they are not responsible, and we haven't taught them that aspect of responsibility of picking up their clothes or putting their, you know, clothes away, etc., we then sit with the responsibility of having to deal with a frazzled child, a frazzled mother, and a very bad start to the day.
Definitely. And I think, you know, the important side of it is that I work from home. I'm a stay-at-home mother, work-from-home mother. My husband works very long hours. So I've got to get it all done in the day. And the fact is, I cannot get it all done myself. If I have to do all of the tasks, I'm going to fall apart by the end of the day. And my children know that I've got to do a certain amount of work in the afternoon. So if we all get the homework done and the tidying up done and everything unpacked after school, they know that they can go get their screen time, and mommy knows she can go work quietly, in peace and quiet, while they, you know, play their games and stuff. So, you know, it's really about kind of getting what we all need out of our day.
Now, Linda, there's another dynamic to the South African society, because we all, we know that, I mean, for most households, there's domestic assistance, right, within the home. There's a helper, there's someone that does the work, etc. How do we then build responsibility in our children when we've got somebody doing the bulk of sort of the cleaning up, doing the, you know, washing the clothes, packing it away, etc.? Because that is a massive dynamic within South African society.
It is a big dynamic, and I have a lady that comes in on a Tuesday. She comes in at 8 and she works till about 1, 2 o'clock. She leaves just before I go to fetch my children from school. And I've got a rule with my children that this lady comes in, she doesn't come in to tidy up, she comes in to clean. So if their bedroom is messy, so if their clothes are on the floor and their, you know, their toys are all messed up and all over the place, the lady that works for me knows that if there's anything lying around, she doesn't have to clean that room. And my children know that when they get home from school and the whole house has been cleaned, that they're going to have to tidy up and clean their own room.
That's a great way to look at it, even within the realm of having a domestic helper, is being able to say, no matter what's lying on your floor, you're then going to have to clear that up. And that's a great way to put it, because I do, for myself as well, I find that a challenge is that, you know, if someone's doing the work for you all the time, you tend to take that for granted. And there's also a loss of respect within our children in terms of who's there, the work that's being done. And I think that's also a massive thing in building responsibility. We're trying to build character and integrity and, you know, ethics within our children as well.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, the thing is that the lady that comes in to work for me, that's my treat, because I do almost everything in the household. Like I said, my husband works long hours. He does help out in the evenings and the weekends. But the majority of everything, the cooking, the shopping, the laundry, you know, the majority is my responsibility. So that is my treat. And if people are not, anyone in the house is not going to kind of stick to the rules that I've set, then they're going to have to clean their own, you know, little area.
Yeah. You know, what I find with children that's so amazing, and I think as adults we need to understand, is that we think that we need to keep doing, as mothers particularly, especially if you're a stay-at-home mom, perhaps you don't have a sideline job or anything that you're doing. So this responsibility, you feel that, you know, you are so responsible for your children that you need to do everything for them. But what I've found through the lockdown, through the pandemic, through our children starting to get into the kitchen more, or making a toasted cheese, or learning how to make pancakes, or, you know, learning how to drill a hole, whatever it is, in terms of being able to be responsible with tools, responsible in the kitchen, what they tend to get is a sense of agency on their lives. a sense of I can do something, and they really do build confidence. Do you find that in this process, when speaking to people about your article or with your own children, that through responsibility, our children learn to become a lot more confident?
Yes, definitely, for sure. And they get a sense of pride in what they do as well.
It's absolutely true. So let's move tack onto this aspect you were talking about in terms of apologizing. You know, a decade ago, parents never thought about apologizing to their children. And many of us grew up that way. We, you know, parents were not going to say they were sorry. Why is there a need to apologize to our children? And what will this teach them for later on in life?
Well, I make lots of mistakes as a parent, and I have, you know, done wrong by my children before. I've shouted at them, I've lost my cool, I've said something that's wrong, and they are little people. And, you know, just as you would, you know, if you've, I mean, I wouldn't go to the shop and shout at someone at the, you know, at the till, but why have I then lost my cool and shouted at my children? You know, I've done that before, and I feel absolutely awful about it, and I think it's a very important part of parenting and just being, you know, a decent human being. It's to apologize to somebody when you've done something wrong.
And absolutely. I think this parenting journey is more to teach us also in terms of who we are. And you're right, you know, we wouldn't go to a store, we wouldn't go to someone, to a stranger, we wouldn't go to our friends and scream at them or speak to them in the way we sometimes speak to our children. And it's oftentimes our own inadequacies. We feel like we've really had a weakness, so we've had a bad day, we haven't done something right, etc. And we're sitting with our own self-confidence issues, and we tend to take it out on the weakest link in the house.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to Radio Islam International with me, Sister Faiza Munshi, and my guest, Lynn Hazeman.
We're talking about the aspect of bringing up responsible children, you know, making sure that how are we going to raise children who are responsible, who we can depend on, and also who can just really have a life that doesn't keep us in grips where we've got to keep our breath in all the time about what are they going to do next. Lynn, with regard to this aspect of, you know, preteens, and there's different ages that we've got to deal with our children, how do we as parents deal with our preteens? You know, they're at that stage where they'll do things almost just to, you know, get a reaction out of us.
Well, my daughter's 9, so she's, I suppose she's going to be a preteen soon, and she's actually a very sweet child, very respectful. You know, if I think of myself as a teen, you know, like you've said in my bio, I'm a recovering alcoholic and addict, so I was one of those terror teens. I don't know how my mother got through in one piece, to be honest, but my daughter appears to be very different. I think I might have a problem with my son when he gets to that age. But I think perhaps just talking to children and, you know, keeping the communication lines open. And I think also the aspect of, you know, treating your children with respect. And when you make a mistake, like shouting at them, apologizing, so that when they are a teenager, they know that you are on their team and that you work together. I'm hoping. I mean, like I say, my children are not quite there, so I'm hoping.
Okay. I'm gonna say good luck to you, because I've got a 12 going on 13-year-old girl. And then a 9-year-old girl and a 10-year-old going on 11 boy. And it's interesting because our children do change. Their personalities as they grow up. And that evolution is also interesting for us as parents, because the once very sweet little girl now becomes very feisty and has all of these dramatic reactions to everything. So it becomes quite interesting to be a parent. But I think it's important, and there's been a big move, Lynn, and this is so much more a conversation between you and I than an interview, I know, because I think as mothers, that's what we need to do, is have these conversations about the fact that as parents, we need to grow in our own spaces to be able to deal with whatever is going to happen and come up with our children, because they are going to go through hormonal changes, and they are going to go through, you know, losing friends, making new friends, or, you know, having all of these changes like the pandemic, for example. So we've got to really have our feet on the ground. What is your comment with regard to, and I know this is really not, you know, directly talking about raising responsible children, but I think in effect it is, because when we look at our own mental health, it's really important. So how do you see your mental health and your ability to take care of your mental health with all of the issues you've had in the past, an important aspect of bringing up responsible children?
It's absolutely huge. And, yeah, it's a little off topic, but, you know, my troubles with my life and my mental health started when I was 14 or even younger, about 12, when I was bullied at school. And I, for some reason, thought that my mother was against me, and I had this, you know, all those conspiracy theories going on in my head. I was, yeah, not quite right. And, you know, I look at this now and I try and look at my daughter and think about what I was thinking at that young age and how I can make sure that my, you know, our family, we've got mental health challenges all over our family. We've got paranoid schizophrenics, we've got alcoholics, we've got drug addicts, we've got depression, we've got anxiety, we've got OCD, we've got everything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this does run in families. And also, however I, you know, whatever my coping mechanisms are and whatever my mental health issues are, they are going to affect my children. So, you know, I've got this great balancing act. And here's another interesting fact, and that is that they say that when you are an alcoholic or an addict, your emotional age is equivalent to the age that you started using, and then you leave out all of your using time, and then you carry on again from the age that you got clean. So I started using at the age of 14, and I stopped at the age of 29, which is a period of 15 years. Sure. And I'm now 13 years clean. So I can take 16 and add 2 years onto that. So I was 2 years clean when I had my daughter. So it was the equivalent of having a baby, emotional intelligence and emotional maturity, of having a baby at the age of 18.
Yeah.
So I struggled, and I had PND. I went off my meds when I was pregnant. It was a new relationship. It was chaos. So I have, on a mental health perspective with parenting, I've had a bit of a tough run of things. I've tried my best to stay stable. I haven't always succeeded, but I've managed to right myself over time. And I think it's, you know, we talk about progress, not perfection, and that is actually a recovery term. And that is kind of what I'm always striving for. You know, and you talk about apologizing and making mistakes. That's part of my 12-step program, is step 10, basically looking back at your day, thinking, what have I done wrong? What could I have done better? Have I made, you know, have I wronged anybody? Do I need to make amends? And I think through this program and through looking so closely at my own mental health, it's been very beneficial for me and for my children.
Do you believe that you try so hard because of, you know, sort of the family history of mental illness? And that's why you think this is so important, bringing up children who are responsible. Because if you raise a child who is responsible, they tend to then take that into their lives and into the schoolwork that they do and into perhaps the relationships that they have. And, you know, it always builds on the positive, will build on the positive. Is that what you're hoping for in terms of raising a child that's responsible to pick up their toys first and then go to the next step as they get older?
Yes, most definitely. Most definitely. I mean, you know, if you look at addiction and the mental health struggles that I've had, it's all about not being responsible. It's all about not taking responsibility for my actions, not owning my stuff. So, you know, I don't know what direction my children are going to go in. I don't know if they are going to follow the family pattern that we have of a lot of our family members. I don't know if they're going to go down the path of addiction or mental health struggles or depression. It's, you know, there's so much stuff that goes into this responsibility, and it's not just about your child picking up their jersey off the floor. It goes a lot further than that.
Absolutely. And you see that. I definitely see the link between trying to build that responsibility in them and making sure that, you know, as much as we can, we do the best that we can. Now, you know, a big question, and I spoke about it earlier, and I had a chuckle about it, because oftentimes we are branded as nags. You know, we nag. We just nag. And, you know, you always, that's what that's what people say. You know, you're just always nagging. But what is the difference between nagging your kids and reminding them? How do we differentiate between them? And how do we then teach them responsibility without being a nag?
Well, it's about being consistent, and that's not easy either. I remember my mom asking me once when I was crying about how tough it was, and she said, how consistent are you? And I said, very, except when I'm tired, then I'm not consistent at all. So, you know, it's about being consistent. It's about also, you know, you need to, and I think, have you ever seen Super Nanny, that with Joe? I love that woman.
And I did see that, yes.
She's got some amazing tips. Don't nag. You ask once. If they don't do it, you say, again, you need to do this, or this and this and this is going to happen. And then you carry out that consequence, you know. And what I do is I count to three, and then the consequence is handed out. And I promise you now, all I have to do, I don't even have to say anything. If they know they're doing something wrong, all I have to do is say one. And these two children jump. They know when I hit three, I'm handing out my consequence. So,
you know, sorry to come in there, but I think one of the greatest sort of, you know, issues with women these days is the fact that you feel almost, and I'm saying this in terms of being a mother, in terms of being a wife, and speaking perhaps on behalf of many women who are out there that are listening, particularly if you're at home and you've, you know, prepared a meal and you expect people to be at the table at a certain time, and you're then shouting and screaming and trying to get everyone there, and you can... everyone being ungrateful for you as the person that you are and the role within the home. And I think that's where that nagging comes in, because people feel that, you know, I need people to get to this table, or I need them to pick up the stuff, or I need them to do this because I need to feel appreciated. But at the end of the day, we've got to sort of almost put your foot down in terms of being appreciated and say, if this doesn't happen, then, you know, such as I just stop doing certain things, or you don't get, there's something that you've got to, you know, deal with after that in a negative way.
Definitely. And I think it's all about working together as a household as well. It's not all my responsibility. I didn't, you know, when my husband and I got married, I didn't get a form that says, would you like to cook supper every night? And I tick that box. Yeah, another little thing that says, are you going to do all the shopping and the laundry and the cleaning and the, you know, it wasn't
the
like a little,
picking up in the dropping off.
I did not volunteer. But it all just lands on my shoulders as the woman of the house. And I think that's what happens in a lot of households all over the world. The woman just gets the jobs, all the jobs. And why is it my responsibility? And I've made it very clear to my family that I've made the supper for you. And I expect somebody else to do the dishes later out of respect for me, because I made this lovely meal for you. And that is how I explain it to my family. I don't say, could you please help me? I say, you must do your bit in this household. And I think that's important for women to remember that.
That is very interesting, because I think that's where many women have trouble, because they feel sorry for everyone around the house. And I'm saying this out loud because I think for many of us, it's a martyr syndrome. It's an aspect of, oh, shame, my poor kids go to school, and for us, our kids go to Madrid in the afternoon, they've got extra murals, my husband's working all day and I'm at home, so I need to be the martyr. I need to do the food, the dishes, the cleanup, the homework and everything else that goes with it, because shame, they have such a tough day.
No, I'm not like that. In fact, on weekends, I don't do any cooking and I don't do any cleaning. My husband must braai, and if the children want food, they must go into the kitchen and they must find it, make it, eat it and take their plate back to the kitchen.
You know, bit about these discussions is important, because I think oftentimes we, as women, we take on the responsibility. We take on this martyr syndrome, and it's nice speaking to someone who doesn't do that. And then we become bitter about it. In old age, all you hear women saying is, but I did this for you and I did this for you. And it is a generational thing that becomes a problem. So if you're not in that martyr syndrome, if you're saying, you know, everyone in this house has the responsibility, I love that you say that I'm not saying, oh, please do this for me. You're saying this is your responsibility. I'm not saying they're not doing it for you. They're doing it because they live in that household. And how important is it that families work together, household? What does it do for a family unit when you can work together and really see each other as a unit? What does that do?
Well, it's absolutely essential. I mean, I'm not here to wait on anybody hand and foot. It's not a hotel. And if it was, I should be paid for running it. So, you know, I think everybody needs to know that, you know, a household doesn't just run on it by itself, and everybody needs to take a turn doing all the different jobs in the household. So it needs to rotate so that no one gets stuck doing like the worst job, like cleaning the toilets. Ew. I mean, I've had my kids scrub the toilet. They must have their turn.
And I think, you know, within each household that's listening, every woman that's listening to today's program, they'll have a different list of chores that their children can do. Like I said, some households may have a full-time domestic helper, but there's a lot more that still can be done around the house. It can be the responsibility of the children and of the spouse. We're talking about children, but it's important, I think, that both parents show a united front in terms of what they would do for each other. And so that would create a sense in the children that they need to respect both the mom and the dad, you know, not just the dad, for example, or not just the mom.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the dad needs to totally chip in as well. Yes. I've been married now for 9 years. My husband is Afrikaans, and let's just say we've had our challenges. But we are they're ironed out. So my husband does dishes, he sweeps the floor, he baths the children, he does his fair share. I mean, obviously I do the bulk of it because I am at home and he works long hours. But on the weekends he does all the brying. At the moment he does the bathing of the children every single night and putting them to bed, because it's just been a really tough year for me, to put it bluntly, the last year.
I think this ability to be able to keep a marriage going because of that bulk of responsibility falling on women, and men then being at home, working from home, but not taking on sort of tasks, has also become a massive, break in households and a break in family relationships, which I think we need to all sort of start asking the question of how is it that we need to change what's happening within the household and the responsibilities that fall on everybody.
Definitely. I think it's been a huge shift for a lot of families. And I think something that my husband got a bit of an eye-opener, when was it? I can't remember. He's worked mostly all the way through because he's in the food industry. But there was a couple of days he was at home. And like I said, on weekends, I don't do cleaning, cooking. I rest on a weekend now. But during the week, I'm like a machine. You know, I've got a routine. Mm-hmm. I stick to it. I work my butt off. And you know, but by the time my husband gets home, the children are, all their homework is done, everything's packed away, everything's tidy, clean, supper's on the table. It's literally just, you know, a couple of dishes and the children go to bed. So he doesn't see usually what I do in a day. And recently he was at home and he came to me and he says, does it work like this every day? I said, yes, it works like this every single day, Monday to Friday, through school holidays, everything. And then on the weekends, yeah, I lie around in my pajamas and I don't do anything. So yeah, you see a different side of me now. It was quite an eye-opener.
Yes, and that must have been quite the eye-opener.
Definitely.
Yeah. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you, Lynn. And, you know, we've come to the end of the program. But before we finish off, I'd like to first thank you for your time on Radio Islam today. But also, what would you like to leave our listeners with regard to today's program and raising children that are responsible?
Wow. Sure, there's so much, but I think just, you know, do the best with what you have and leave the rest, especially, you know, with COVID and everything. There's so much going on at the moment. And another thing, it's not quite raising responsible children, but put yourself first, because you have a huge amount of responsibility and you are the caregiver for the entire family. So make sure to fill your cup first so that you can fill the cups of others.
I love that. And we're going to end on that note, is fill your own cup so that you can fill the cup of others. Len, it's been a pleasure speaking to you, to our Radio Islam listeners. I'm hoping you've gained lots of insight from today's program. Until next time, from me, Sister Faiza Munshi, it's wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.